full of mercs, and then they'd go around. This morning she said, "Let's go through the park, move with the crowd." So Nona took Camilla's hand and moved with the crowd. The plants filtered out some of the clinging smoke, and Nona loved to look at the trees and the bristly curving shapes of the shrubs and bushes. Much of the vegetation had been turfed up, some in an attempt to make a community garden, some of it into shanty houses, skulking against the big concrete fence. Another place had been cleared and ineptly concreted over, and they put the cages there. The cages were bone-cold, and they'd been almost fully cleaned. But Nona didn't like looking, so she spent her time gazing at the mist of trailing vines on the tree trunks instead. Once they were out of the park and out of the crowd, Pyrrha kissed the top of Nona's head and said, "Be good," like she always said. She did not kiss the top of Camilla's head, but told her, "Good hunting, you two." "Good hunting," echoed Camilla. Pyrrha melted into the crowd in her big steel-toed boots and her over-the-shoulder bag with her helmet and extra batteries for her helmet light and her gloves and her lunch. It was easier now than when Nona had been very new and Palamedes said she had no object permanence. But Nona still always felt a pang watching Pyrrha walk away, commingled with the pride of having Pyrrha, the familiarity of seeing someone and knowing they belonged to you. Camilla drew her back to the pavement with the guiding hand on the small of her back and said the magic words, "You'll be late for school." Then it was one right turn, one cut through an alley, and one pause as Nona pointed out to Cam a building that had been fine only the other day and now had a huge hole in it. "They used a very big gun," was Cam's explanation, before they got buzzed into the school building by the nice lady teacher and went up two flights of squeaky linoleum stairs. Camilla always turned down the offer of a warm drink in the tiny staff room, and turned it down quicker the more compassionately she was asked, and then she melted away into the street like a grey shadow. Nona often watched her from the window.
"Kevin's here already, so he can help you take down the chairs and clean the whiteboards," said the teacher.
This was absolute stupidity on the teacher's part, as Nona knew Kevin would not help take down the chairs, nor clean the whiteboards, nor do anything but sit on the cushions where the stuffing was leaking out in drifts of off-white beads. Then the teacher said unexpectedly,
"Hot Sauce is here too."
Not even the teacher knew Hot Sauce's real name. Nona said,
"That's early."
"Yes, I asked her why, but she wouldn't say. Check on her, won't you?"
As though Nona could check on Hot Sauce.
"I'm worried about her, living alone. I've tried to tell her about the sheltered accommodation, but she's too independent."
Nona was still laughing over the idea as she went into the classroom and started taking the chairs down off the desks. Kevin was, as she'd predicted, lying flat on one of the cushions, doing something social and complex with two stuffed rodents. But there was Hot Sauce, feline, and still next to one of the schoolhouse windows, her burns rippling neatly beneath the electric light when Nona turned it on.
"Turn it off," said Hot Sauce. So, of course, Nona turned it off.
"Come here."
Nona took the plastic, chlorine-smelling box of whiteboards and the rag and the spray bottle with her, and she squatted down next to Hot Sauce, wetting the rag with the stuff in the spray bottle. Hot Sauce said,
"Don't let them see you from the window."
"Who's watching?"
"Don't know.
Green building, fourth floor."
Nona was smart enough to catch herself getting up to look, which she privately congratulated herself upon. She placed the cleanly scrubbed white square on the threadbare carpet, which also smelled like chlorine, and started on the second. She remembered about Blood of Eden and all the talking, and it gave her a sudden worry. She said,
"Do you think they're watching me?"
At least Hot Sauce took her seriously. She went, "Hmm," which was how you could tell.
"Why would they be watching you?"
"I don't know. They were here before you, so doubt it." Nona said, Who are they?
Hot Sauce didn't say anything for the longest time. Then she said, I'm investigating.
Once Hot Sauce said that she would do something, all you could do was wait for Hot Sauce to do it. She would not invite you to help or ask your opinion. Hot Sauce's failure to ask anyone's opinion on anything she did was probably the reason she was the unquestioned authority in the school, over and above the teachers. Nona had told Palamedes about it, and Palamedes had said, Lead researcher material, certainly. So now there was nothing for Nona to do but clean off all the whiteboards and lug the box of them over by Kevin, and when invited, examine the silent discourse between the stuffed rodents, which was conveyed by mashing them together. Nona searched for the right words and said, They're having a baby, aren't they? And Kevin seemed pleased. By the time the whiteboards were cleaned, and all the chairs were taken down, and Nona had emptied the bins, most of the other children had streamed into the classroom. They all sat at their tables, with Nona at a special table at the back for her and any of the smallest children who were feeling wet or vulnerable and wanted to sit in her comforting presence. This morning Nona was left alone, which she liked. Hot Sauce had put the wind up her. She listened with only one ear to the teacher taking the morning roll call, and she took the whiteboard she was allowed to use and drew squiggles on it with only half her brain. The other half of her brain was plagued with questions. Who is watching the classroom from the green building? How will Hot Sauce investigate? Then her mind wandered. What will Pyrrha check out for Camilla today? Why is the seat such a nutritious part? Who am I? So her drawing wasn't much good, and was further harmed midway through the lesson when the teacher was taking Honesty and Hot Sauce and Born in the Morning for integers, while the nursery class copied things down off the board. One of the tinies, who didn't like going to the bathroom alone, tugged on Nona's sleeve, so she ended up standing in front of the cubicle lost in thought, and then she got distracted, looking at herself in the mirror. It was such a relief to be pretty, and to have the braids that Pyrrha had given her look so dark and juicy and glossy. Cam said her hair was drying up, and she had white spots on her nails, but Nona couldn't see it. When the tiny emerged from the toilet, Nona helped it wash its hands and return promptly to the numbers on the board, and by then the angel had arrived. The angel looked less like an angel than ever that morning. Nona always liked the science teacher's face, which was sort of snub-nosed and thin and crinkly around the eyes. But that morning she was frankly untidy. She was a gallant little person of 40-ish, who gave the impression that she had learnt a lot early in life and discovered late that it was no real good to her or anyone else. This lent her teaching a weightless, secretive feeling, like it was really all for fun at the end of the day. She liked to wear button-up shirts, often with suspenders to hold up the trousers, and a dust jacket to keep her clothes neat walking through the city. But that morning her shirt looked like yesterday's shirt, and her face looked like yesterday's face, careworn, with her freckles fading into the background of her skin. All of the angel was tinted in soft greys and browns, but she had delicious reddish freckles scattered on her cheeks and nose, which added life and vivacity to her face. Not so much today. As Nona led the tiny by hand into the classroom, Hot Sauce had paused on integers to say,
Good morning, sir,
which caused a reverberation around the classroom of equally respectful good morning, sir, good mornings. But the angel's answering, Good morning, everyone, was distinctly pallid. Hot Sauce noticed that. Nona watched as Hot Sauce never fully returned to integers, but quivered at the front desk with the others, her eyes constantly flicking back to the angel. Nona thought the angel was moving like someone who hadn't slept well. Sometimes Pyrrha went out late at night and came back smelling like alcohol, and Camilla would say nothing at all. But if Palamedes was there, he would say, Really, Pyrrha? And Pyrrha would just say,
Really, Sextus? And then the next morning, she would be walking in that same rumpled, weary fashion, though Nona thought she exaggerated it for effect. Nothing Pyrrha drank could really hurt her. She had even drunk the contents of the bleach bottle once. When Palamedes had asked why, Pyrrha said she had realised she wasn't used to being tortured while immortal and wanted to get a head start. And Palamedes said bullshit because he thought Nona had not been listening. Nona wondered if the angel had been drinking too, albeit not bleach, which had given Pyrrha some sensational hiccups. She shared this thought with Hot Sauce and the others at break time after numbers and reading, when they huddled in the corner with their sliced fruit.
"What, hungover, you mean?" said Honesty. "Give us your fruit, Nona."
"I already promised it to Ruby," said Nona, whose portion was always promised before class started, sometimes days in advance.
"Fuck you, Ruby," said Honesty. "You know I want it when it's stone fruit." "You shouldn't always get whatever you want," said beautiful Ruby. "I'll never get whatever I want," said Honesty, inconsolable.
"If you swear again, I'll make you go and put your name up on the board," said Nona. Hot Sauce said, "The angel doesn't drink." Born in the Morning wanted to know how Hot Sauce knew. Hot Sauce simply said, "Because I know," which ended that line of questioning. Beautiful Ruby, perhaps buoyed by being that day's fruit recipient, held out cupped hands for the foodstuff in question and said,
"Hey, you don't look so well lately, Nona. You look kind of sick."
Everyone turned to look at Nona, who writhed beneath this judgment, and they agreed that she had not looked well for, like, weeks.
"I do," she said indignantly. "Look at my braids. I look wonderful."
Which thankfully replaced their worry with a group effort to squash her vanity. They often took it in turns to squash Nona's vanity, which never worked. Beautiful Ruby, the best-looking out of them all, and therefore the authority on looks, had once said,
"You got the face of a rat and the body of a dead person."
But Nona knew she was beautiful and was complacent about it. Even if they all assured her that she was nothing to write home about, she could say, "Who cares? I can't write." And then they had to switch tack and squash her for being proud that she was so goddamn stupid. Nona quite liked this, really. It made her feel like she belonged. They were all proud of her stupidity, in the same way that they were proud of Honesty's rampant crimes and of Hot Sauce being the most important person in the universe. Ruby ate all of his stone fruit and nearly all of Nona's too. Then he magnanimously said,
"I'm full. Honesty, you take the last bit. I get fruit at home."
Honesty was not overburdened with shame.
"Lucky boy, lucky boy," he said, and he tossed the fruit up in the air.
The rest of them shouted and caught it in his mouth, which he always did. Honesty had the widest mouth Nona had ever seen. He chewed and did not bother to finish chewing before he said,
"I don't mind telling you, I need the blood sugar. I've got a job after lunch."
Born in the Morning scoffed.
"Real job or Honesty job?"
But Born in the Morning was always a bit of a stickler.
"Real job, Sunshine, real job. Underground," he added, and tapped his nose mysteriously.
Hot Sauce said, "Dangerous."
"I know. Those tunnels is hell," said Honesty, baldly. "But I'll be in a car the whole time, and no shooty-shooty. It's just stripping stuff off the pipes again."
Beautiful Ruby was impressed.
"You should have said. I would have given you half if I'd known." "I'm not a boy who boasts," said Honesty. "God, you're a liar," said Born in the Morning.
When the class teacher clapped her hands together and announced the hour of science, which meant Nona was about to get the hour of noodle, Hot Sauce dawdled behind. She looked Nona dead in the eye, the ripples of her burns making pretty ridges up and down one cheek, and she said,
"You're right."
"That I'm beautiful," said Nona.
"No, about the angel. The angel's worried."
"Okay," said Nona.
"Stay on the grounds today," said Hot Sauce, "when you take noodle."
It was getting hot. When she took Noodle down the side stairs of the building and went out through a side door to the rubble out back, the heat hit her like a slap. Not as uncomfortable as it would be later, but enough that it wasn't hard to do as Hot Sauce said and keep to the shade with Noodle. He gamely ran a few times around the fenced part, all six of his legs moving in wonderful concert, but then he tired out and came and sat next to her and panted. Nona shared water with him from a bottle and looked around, looked up at the next building, and listened to the sounds on the road, all the caroling honks and people calling out to one another. But there was nothing abnormal at all. This was almost worse, because she had been waiting for it. The most interesting sight was someone lounging in an alleyway opposite the school building, sitting in a busted-up chair next to an overflowing bin. And Nona watched intently, trying to decide if they were dead or not. She decided not dead, because they were wearing quite a good jacket and face guard, and nobody was coming around surreptitiously trying to take either. She was somewhat disconsolate and cross by the time the main teacher called out to her from the second-story window, but she cheered up at the handover. Noodle licked her hand, and the angel said, "Nona, you are a little lifesaver." And there was the pleasant after-class dopey feeling of half the children preparing for lunch and sleep. The blinds were being drawn, and a couple of parents were there to pick up children who had food and naps elsewhere. But Hot Sauce and her friends were all dragging their mats together, claiming the coolest and darkest corner of the room. When Hot Sauce saw her, she said quietly, "Anything strange?" And Nona reported everything, including the possible body. And Hot Sauce seemed satisfied, even though there was so little to tell. She said, "Okay, nothing. Good work, Nona." And Nona was happy again, and forgot all about the body, or anyone watching anything.
5. Camilla was waiting for her in the vestibule, where the coats and masks and the bathrooms were. When she asked how school had gone, Nona was able to say, "Good," with perfect truthfulness, and then they sidled away before the main teacher could try to slip them a pamphlet and look Camilla over for bruises, and they walked home in complete amity on the shadiest side of the street. As they went out of the school building, Nona looked quickly in the alleyway for the person she'd seen in the coat and mask, but they were gone, which meant either they really had been alive, or someone else had gotten to them already. The heat made the backs of Nona's knees blister with sweat, but Cam, unlike Palamedes, was always merciless about keeping her going. In a way, she was glad that it was Cam today and not Palamedes, because even in his short appearances, Palamedes liked to ask probing questions about exactly what the teacher was teaching and to say things like, "My God, that's how they teach mathematics," and cluck Cam's tongue in a way that was impossible to answer. Camilla was just quiet and nice and held Nona's hand, and once they got into the building gave Nona a long drink of ice water from the cooling cupboard. Nona enjoyed the water, but wilted a little at the sight of Camilla removing a carton of more sliced fruit from the cupboard. She and Pyrrha and Palamedes had gotten it into their heads a month or so ago that Nona could be tempted with fruit, which was true then, but not particularly true now. Nona had decided that she was fine with having eaten fruit, but not with eating fruit. But she was too cheerful to disappoint Camilla, so they both ate slices of sweating orange melon until it was time to tack up the thick black sheeting on the windows, and then Cam barred the door and gave Nona the bones. Nona sat cross-legged on the floor and chose to arrange them in a sort of snaking spiral, smallest pieces in the centre and biggest pieces on the outside, as Camilla sat nearby and sketched what she was doing on a brown sheet of butcher's paper. "Where did you go?" Nona asked, once she had taken the time to admire her handiwork. "When I was at school, I mean." The pencil stilled briefly. "Seeing people." "About Site C?" "Keep going. There are some bones left."
Nona added a big greyish knobble of bone to the spiral, but with no great interest. It was only a bone. Nice to nibble at, boring otherwise.
Done, she said, then guessed. People like Crown?
The pencil had been put down. The eyes had shadowed into earthen greys.
Crown, said Palamedes pleasantly, isn't our friend right now.
Okay. Take that smallest piece there and try rolling it in your fingers. Feel all the little indentations in that scooped-out portion.
I love Crown, Nona protested, giving the smallest bone a desultory grope.
Why do you love Crown?
Nona thought about it. She has lovely hair, and when she hugs you, she smells like cinnamon, and her breasts feel nice, and she's so big and pretty.
Palamedes looked at her, and then he took the notepad out of Camilla's capacious pockets.
Nona despaired.
There was always a tick somewhere if she mentioned breasts.
That's not exactly love, as I would classify it, he said. That's simply a list of things most red-blooded human beings like about Crown. How do you know what cinnamon smells like, Nona?
Oh, I don't know. I just do. Is your timer on?
Yes, it's on. Thank you for asking. Why don't you pick out the piece of bone you like best and tell me about it?
She looked at them all. There were long, tree-like pieces with branches coming off them, and little wedged pieces, and a long, smooth piece with the jaggedy end. Nona picked the jaggedy piece and ran her thumb over the prickly, splintered end, liking the bright itch.
Am I not allowed to love Crown? She said.
I could never stop you from loving anything. I don't have the right. Nobody has the right to tell you who to love or who not to love, and equally, nobody's obliged to love you. If you were forced into loving them, it wouldn't be love.
Nona liked that. That's why I love Hot Sauce and Honesty and my friends so much. They don't have to like me, and it was a huge surprise when they liked me, but they do.
Being unexpectedly loved is so wonderful or terrible, isn't it?
Wonderful, I think, she said. Then she said, well, I still love Crown anyway.
She's used to people loving her anyway, said Palamedes,
with the air of someone not wholly paying a compliment.
Do we still like the captain?
Even Nona couldn't quite love the captain. I pity the captain to the very depths of my heart. I never did like her much, said Palamedes. I pity Crown, not at all, and like her terribly. That's the problem. Why don't you try to make that end smooth?
Nona pressed her thumb down hard on the jagged end of the bone piece. The pad of her thumb began to feel warm. The tiny splinters of bone broke her skin, and a pinprick of red blood bubbled up. Nona stuck her thumb in her mouth. Palamedes carefully drew it away.
Good thinking. That's antiseptic, but I can do better, he said.
And with fine lines appearing at the side of Camilla's mouth, the minutest fragment of bone popped out from the blood. Then the wound was gone and the warm feeling with it. Nona said curiously,
does that hurt, Camilla?
No, thank God. I'd never do it if it did.
Why is it that the blue light in the sky hurts other people, said Nona, but not you and Cam?
She had asked this upward of a dozen times, especially lately, but Palamedes always answered unhesitatingly, no matter how many times he had been asked before.
She's got the wrong kind of body. She and I can cheat, for now. Draw on me, not her, for the unusual kinds of things that I do, with the downside being that our time is very limited. If I was in her body for too long, I'd hurt her, and the blue light would start to hurt me. But in summary, nothing will hurt Camilla so long as I stick to the time limit. Makes sense?
I think so, said Nona, and deciding, yes, that's a relief. I wouldn't want anything to hurt Camilla. I love Camilla.
And why do you love Camilla?
Nona struggled with this a little. It was like asking why you breathed air.
I love the way she moves, she said pitifully.
He said, me too.
Do you miss seeing her?
Dreadfully. But the recordings are nice.
Is the blue light going to start hurting Pyrrha, Palamedes? Another question she had begun asking again. Camilla said it was anxiety. Palamedes said gently,
No.
She's immune to the blue light, and it's not going to start hurting her. She's got the right type of body to be hurt by it, but the wrong soul. She was made to be immune to the blue light. So, do I have the wrong kind of body or the wrong kind of soul? This was the only question Palamedes ever hesitated on.
We don't know.
We were worried that the blue light was hurting you when you first came to us, but you're fine. This could mean that you're like Pyrrha, and that you're immune because your soul is protecting your body. But there are a lot of factors, Nona.
Is that why Blood of Eden don't want me?
Oh, they want you, said Palamedes. They want you very badly.
Look,
are you scared by the conversation Pyrrha and I had this morning?
Not really. I mean, I know things are getting worse, she said, wanting to sound worldly. I know I'm not fixed, and we only have a few more months to fix me. And who knows what's going to happen in the meanwhile. But I'm not scared if we suffer. I like we suffer.
Palamedes quirked Cam's eyebrows in the way that meant he was amused. Just because the commander gave you a sweet the once.
It wasn't just that, said Nona.
It was sort of that. We suffer had given her a sweet early on when she had not been having a good day, and she had said,
Keep at the mission, Nona.
The sweet had been too sweet. She had to apologetically spit it out after about 5 sucks because it got too much. But she had liked,
Keep at the mission, Nona.
It had made her feel full of purpose. In another time and in different circumstances, I would also have liked we suffer, said Palamedes.
Hell, I might have liked all of Ctesiphon Wing.
Right now, though,
tidy up the bones. Let's stop for today.
They stopped, then started tidying up the bones together, putting them in the false bottom of the big box that was otherwise filled with canned beans.
Sometimes, she found herself saying, quite meditatively for her, I don't like it when you do the necromancy word.
You just said it, said Palamedes.
But it feels nice at the same time. It's mixed up. It's like when you do that, it makes me sad. Not sad that you did it, but sad that you can do it. Did I say something wrong?
Nona added in a rush, seeing Palamedes' face.
No,
he said, gently after a moment.
I don't understand yet, that's all. Not even a little. I have so much to learn in the ways of not understanding.
Then he got the expression he only got when he was thinking about doing something. This was the expression that isolated him the most from Camilla's face. Camilla had the same look on her face when she was doing something, and when she was thinking about it, which was what made Camilla so hugely unexpected. Before he could do whatever it was, though, the timer bleated in his pocket.
Time's up, he said. Give this to Cam for me, will you?
And he spread Nona's fingers like he always did, and he quietly kissed the second right-hand knuckle. Nona always paid so much more attention to the lessons of the hand and the mouth than she did to the lessons of the bone and the sword. They were significantly more interesting. With the bone and the sword, she faintly got the impression that she was being read a boring bit out of the newspaper, or one of the two-for-one books Pyrrha sometimes bought from the back of somebody's truck. Whenever she was read to from one of these, she was asleep in minutes. But she was good at this, whatever this was. She didn't even know. Nobody would give her the words, and she didn't have them herself. The first time Palamedes had asked her to do it, quite a long time ago, and the first time she had raised Camilla's hand to her mouth and done it, pretty much exactly as Palamedes had, making the same shape as his mouth had done like she did when speaking languages and touching the same way as his hands had touched, Camilla had looked at her, and then she had gone away to sit in the bath by herself in the dark for almost an hour, even though there hadn't been any water in the bath.
Now, when Nona waited for Camilla's eyes to clear, and she lifted up Camilla's hand to press her mouth to it, all Camilla said was, "Thanks," and she almost didn't flinch.
6.
Pyrrha was working late that evening. They were demolishing a big building that everyone was worried about to come down and squash all of the surrounding streets flat and go right through the road to the tunnels. The work kept on being stop, start, because people couldn't decide who was responsible for paying the workers, the militia or the old civic government. Down at the local dairy, one of the old men had grumbled that at least with the houses around you knew who was paying who, and the other old man had said, "Is that all you care about, you shameful old bastard?" And then they realised Nona was there, and to cover up their mutual embarrassment, they had asked Nona what she thought. She said she didn't mind what happened, so long as Pyrrha got paid because she wanted a birthday present. Then they chucked her beneath the chin and laughed a lot, and Nona didn't know why, because she had been perfectly sincere. They each gave her a coffee coupon, and she was so excited that she nearly dropped the coupons twice on the way home. Now that the last of the heat had died, Camilla was uncapping fresh water to put into the tank so that they could have a bath. Nona had her scrubbed down in front of the sink, hopping cold despite the heat, eager to get into the warm water. The door was cracked a little so that she could hear Camilla moving around, sloshing the water around with a stick to make sure there was nothing blocking up the pipe. She said, "Will you read to me?" They were still getting through old news sheets where people wrote in questions about problems they were having, and the editor suggested things they could do. They were written half in a language Cam could read and half in one she couldn't. Nona loved these sheets. Nobody in real life would ever have the problems these people in the paper had, and the suggestions were even worse. "Piece of melon gets you 5 minutes," was the reply. "I can eat 2, Nona decided. "That's 10. And when's Pyrrha coming back?"
"Bedtime, probably. We won't wait up."
Then she shocked Nona deeply by saying, "Nona, would you ever want to leave here?"
"What?"
"Live on a farm with the warden and me, with Pyrrha. Out of the city, away."
"No," said Nona, startled and not at all pleased. "I love it here."
"Would you love a new home too, if we were all there?"
"Maybe," said Nona, now startled and suspicious.
"Is there anything you're not telling me?" It was the first time ever that Camilla had asked that question. It was such an abundantly awful question to ask. The silence drew out between them in a way that made the tips of Nona's ears feel hot. It felt as though it lasted a very long time. Then, "Yes," said Nona faintly. There was another long pause. "Do you promise to tell me or Palamedes if you get scared about something or don't know what to do?"
That was more like Camilla.
"Sure," Nona said. "Thanks. We appreciate it." The door opened a fraction, and a plastic saucer with 2 slices of melon appeared. Nona began rinsing her soapy arms. A voice cleared outside the door, and the sheet rustled. "Dear Auntie, when my boyfriend and I get into an argument, he goes to the bathroom and then makes me apologise to..." Nona sat in the bath and ate 1.5 slices of melon, which was 1.5 slices too many, and got about 7 minutes of the letters from people with problems. She laughed a lot. She couldn't read Camilla anything in return, but Camilla liked having baths by herself. So Nona amused herself in the front room, taking strips of paper and folding them into little crinkles and streamers, the way Honesty and Kevin had shown her. Kevin was very good at folding paper into shapes. He had small and nimble fingers. Despite having waited and waited, it was still hot when they both settled down for bed. But there was a breeze, and the windows were open, and they were both comfortable with wet hair and lying with no covers on. Nona tried to doze as the water dried on her body, listening to a muffled siren falling and rising somewhere beyond the blackout curtains. But she and Camilla were both fidgeting too much.
Camilla, with some discipline, stretching her legs out, pointing her toes at the ceiling. Nona trying to get comfortable on her back. She waited for Cam to tell her off for being restless, but eventually Camilla asked, "Should I read another letter?" This was such a nice offer that Nona was pleased and sleepy immediately. "Cam," she said, snuggling up into her back, "can't you tell me a story instead, like you used to? I'll rest my eyes while you talk." "You haven't wanted stories in a while. Said you were too sophisticated." "That was because beautiful Ruby made fun of me when I said what I did to get to sleep," said Nona. That had been early on. It hadn't even been that beautiful Ruby hurt her feelings. It was that the others had shushed him immediately, and Honesty had said in a much louder voice than was necessary,
"Shut up, lad. Nona can do kiddie things if she wants to."
Which was a much better way of letting her know she was being an appalling baby. And Hot Sauce had looked at her in a way she really hadn't liked.
"Hmm," was all Camilla said.
Then,
"What kind of story?"
Nona thought about it. "Tell me the story about how you met me again. Neither you nor Palamedes have told me that one in ages."
"Okay."
Camilla's curt, sweet, low voice took on the tones of recital.
"We met you when the warden saved you,
after you were hurt," Nona supplied. "And it was the first time he showed me he could do things like that because he didn't have a body and you were amazed." And Camilla said,
"Who's telling this, me or you?"
Nona subsided. Camilla said,
"It was the first time
he and I were trying to talk.
He was stuck, not having a body that talked.
At the time we knew you were in trouble. You'd disappeared. We'd been trying to get you. We found you and Pyrrha. You were hurt. Pyrrha helped us escape from an attack. We lost people, ships, something very important. But we got you away, and we wanted to keep you. Other people said no. But you didn't know what was happening. You weren't a threat to anyone, neither was Pyrrha. But not many people believed me, or the warden. Many people said you were too dangerous." Nona said,
"And everyone paid attention to We Suffer, who said, 'I trust them, they will not betray us.'"
"Yes, back then We Suffer trusted us. We Suffer even let Pyrrha live. Pyrrha talked fast. Then I found a way for the warden to come back. That was a relief. He wanted to evoke the break clause, which means he wanted his family away from the houses. You weren't awake yet. You only woke up for very short periods, and you couldn't speak properly. We looked after you. The warden convinced the oversight body, convinced the sixth house, to come with us. We showed them the secret of the installation. We helped them find a steely that would anchor such a big Thanagy transition, which means we helped them move. Then the warden picked 16 people to talk with Blood of Eden, to discuss the future. You were waking up. You met me for the first time."
Nona said, "What did you think of me?"
Knowing the answer,
"I thought I didn't know you at all. You were new." Nona always loved this answer unreasonably. The idea that that was when Camilla met her. That was her birth. She said,
"I don't remember much about back then."
"Not surprised. We didn't let you meet many people."
"And we lived here, and I got better, and Pyrrha went out to work, and you taught me how to speak. And then things went wrong."
That had been a hideous time. Camilla said,
"Yes.
Then things went wrong. The light appeared. We found out Blood of Eden had lied to us, or at least didn't have the power to look after us anymore.
That's it."
Nona stretched her toes out until her ankles burned.
"That was still the kiddie version," she said, faintly accusatory. "I'm more sophisticated, Cam. I can understand more."
"Okay.
Keep in mind, I never had to practice an adult version."
Can I ask questions?
Go ahead.
I don't understand why We Suffer hates Pyrrha.
Pyrrha's best friend killed We Suffer's boss. That made sense.
Why did you want to take your families away from the other place?
We didn't feel we could be there anymore. Not until we really understood what we were doing morally. The warden is our leader, and our families listened to what he had to say. We voted on it, made promises we couldn't keep. Camilla's voice was bitter. Nona was sorry.
If I remember who I am, can't I help to find them? She said.
That's up to you, said Camilla.
Will your families like me? Will they say, well done, Pyrrha, well done, Camilla, well done, Palamedes?
Camilla smiled audibly. No, she said. After that, Nona slept, or thought she was sleeping.
She lay in the heat, feeling it itch across her body, rolling over to find the cool part of the pillow where Camilla had tucked the frozen blocks in the pillow slips like she did every night. She heard Camilla breathing and felt nearly completely at peace, happy despite everything. Sometimes it was hard not to be happy. Sometimes it was so difficult when everyone else had that hard, hurt look at the corners of their eyes that meant they didn't quite know how to carry on. The men at the dairy, Pyrrha, Palamedes, the nice lady teacher at school, Kevin. When she was 90% asleep, she heard the door very quietly unlatch and close. Then she counted, and at the end of 5 counts, there was Pyrrha at the door saying, "Ah, my darling hearts, my sleeping babes, daddy's own treasures." And Camilla saying without opening her eyes, "Go to bed, I just got her to sleep." Nona fell asleep and was happy.
John 5:20.
In the dream, she said, "But that's it. They shut you down. It was over." They were standing at the top of a hill now. She couldn't remember moving. At the bottom of the hill, there was a great swept-out plain, as though somebody had cupped their hand over the landscape and scraped everything to one side, like filth off a table. It was clean to their left, and to their right, where the invisible hand had stopped, was a huge confusion of rubble and metal and foliage, trees and structures, stones and metal. He sat down on a patch of brown grass and laughed a little, and said,
"Beloved, it wouldn't be over. It wouldn't begin for a year."
He said it was the thin end of the wedge. He said that official paperwork claimed they'd decided to pull back and think things through again. But he'd always known they'd reinvested in something else. He just didn't know what. He said when the leak happened, everyone suddenly knew everything. Their project was all over the news. Everyone had a fucking opinion.
Then it suddenly dawned on the general public that this was the next move. We really were in the end game. You weren't going to last the distance, and everyone started to panic. The economy tanked. It hadn't been in great shape to begin with. A was panicking because our kill fee money was suddenly worth nothing, and what if the banks crashed and that nothing went too? C was panicking because with the project over, she was getting recalled to England and didn't want to go. She'd got N and didn't want to leave her, refused to admit they were dating even though we all knew. M was panicking because we had a health board and someone from Energy coming to talk about shutdown and what the hell were we going to do with all the dead bodies we'd collected to test on.
He said,
"It was the last one that was getting to me. I knew all those bodies by name. Funny to say, but they were my mates, you know. I'd worked on them for such a long time, and they'd given us so much, and now they were going to get dumped in some concrete skip because after what we'd done to them, they couldn't be cremated or buried safely. I hated that. I didn't have to worry about the public or the media. We had a pet cop, P. She'd made detective by that point,
was going on to big things in the MOD. Knew G from way back, and G and I were both hometown boys, so P kept the heat down for us. We got a lot of attention at first because they wanted someone to blame, wanted to rubberneck, wanted to write up think pieces about it, wanted to know who we were. M and A could have walked into new jobs in a heartbeat, but I was irradiated. I'd never work in the industry again. I sure as hell wouldn't be allowed to work on anything else to do with you. I told M and A to go and that I'd shut up shop, but they wouldn't leave me. None of them left me.
He said,
"It was such pandemonium. I mean, the worst was yet to come, but it was like the crisis had been announced all over again. Like you'd sprung this on us out of nowhere, like you'd never said you were sick. We went through the same old shitty questions of what to do. What about the Mars installation? What about the fusion batteries? We've still only got room for 5 million tops up there, guys, and we haven't worked out how to feed them either. What about the Kuiper platform? What about Uranus? What about the shell we're building there? And it's like, we knew that was going to be slow 20 years ago, before we knew we were fucked. The only way out was to dump the population on an exoplanet. The cryocans would have let us get everyone to Tau Ceti in my lifetime. Then we could work backward from there. It was about giving you breathing room, you know? I knew I wouldn't live to see you get well, but I wanted to stop you hurting."
He said,
"I wasn't panicking with the rest of them. I know I should have been, but I wasn't. I kept working on the plan even without backing. Kept refining the canister mixture. It was like I knew more every day about how it should work, what the little niggles were. I was having 6 breakthroughs a day. They'd all expected me to go nuts. A kept saying, 'Are you sleeping? Are you okay? Are you taking any Class A's? You know you can tell me.' But I wasn't taking anything. I was sleeping like a baby. I was looking at those guys on the slab, and something in me was like, 'I know you. I know this.'"
He said,
"Told Em that. Huge mistake. She was like, 'Oh my God, you're drinking, aren't you? You're on amphetamines, you're on coke, you're on amphetamines and coke.' I was all, 'Yeah, coke zero.' She didn't laugh. I laughed."
He said,
"I guess I've always thought any pun was automatically funny."
After a while, he said,
"Problem was, the electricity guys were all, 'Look, we sympathise, but we cannot keep diverting 3% of the country's electricity to your vats.' He was a nice guy. The health board man was a dickhead, though. Kept saying we had to dispose of the bodies on site, had to do it now. Could we liquefy? Could we put the fluid in a concrete chamber and bury it? He would have fucking loved that. I was like, 'Piss off. Those are our friends. We need to treat them with respect.' I mean, I guess it was me saying stuff like that, which was worrying, eh? G kept saying I was fine, but he was the voice in the wilderness. G always thought anything I did or said was fine. Not necessarily right, but fine. And then, out of nowhere, they said, 'No more prep. We're shutting you guys down tonight. Lights off.' And we knew that out of the cans, the bodies would degrade immediately. We only had the demo cans. The mass-produced ones were made in a Five Eyes factory in Shenzhen. No question of getting any of the corpses that far. I had to let them go. I went around to everyone, talking to my favourites. I know it was weird having favourites, but let's bloody face it. I'd gone weird, not even saying goodbye, just saying it'll be fine. Hang on for me. Kia kaha kia mai. See, made appeal after appeal after appeal. No dice. They shut down our power to the vats one night, 1 minute after 6. We were all there, waiting, when they turned them off."
He fell silent, and she prompted, "What happened, Lord?" He smiled out over the hillside,
over the flat plains and the twisted rubbish. A strange, fleeting thing with teeth.
Most of the bodies got the melt, like we thought they would, he said. Damaged beyond repair. Their brains liquefied almost immediately. But Harrow, all the ones I touched, all the ones I loved, they stayed incorrupti.
Day 2. Mush for breakfast. Honesty's job goes terribly wrong. The city has a worse day. Camilla and Palamedes keep her home tonight. 4 days until the tomb opens.
7.
Nona's dream cut off abruptly. Something wet and heavy and awful had been dropped on her from above, right on her face, splattering drops everywhere. She squealed so loudly that someone above them stamped on the floor, at which point she had to stop squealing. Camilla was inflexible. She had pressed the button, and she had said, "Start." Nona closed her eyes so hard that she could see bright lights at the fronts, little lightning patterns. "It's the sitting part. My feet are in the nice water, the safe water. The water's in my boots. My socks are full of it. I'm talking to her, but I can't see her face. I tried to, Cam, but it's what always happens. I don't manage to look at it. It just doesn't work."
"That's fine. Keep going."
"We have a talk."
"What do you talk about?"
"I don't know. I can't really understand. I hear the words. Sometimes I open my mouth and words come out and I know I'm talking."
"Sensations? What are you touching?"
"I'm touching her hands. She's touching my hands. But in the dream it's always my hands. Remember, Cam? I'm touching my own hands, but they're not mine."
The pencil scribbled furiously. "Okay, I know how it is. Keep going."
"There's eyes all around us, red eyes, in the darkness. I remember this time, they're red."
"Do you have any thoughts?"
"Yes," said Nona. "I'm hungry, in the dream, really hungry."
The pencil stilled.
"You're hungry?"
"I'm so hungry," said Nona.
The pencil didn't move. Nona realised Camilla must have been waiting for her, must have been disappointed, so she added in tones of slight injury,
"I probably would have remembered more, except then a wet cloth falls on my face and I go, ah, so loudly that the militia person above us stomps, so Pierre is probably going to get another rude letter about us, so really I think the wet cloth on my face isn't a good idea and can you change the alarm?"
"Well, you didn't wake up," said Camilla. "Anything else? Anything else at all?"
"Nothing."
The record button got pushed down with its big bright clack. Nona, still rubbing her face where the sponge had hit it, panicked herself out of her clothes. Her arms and legs seemed even more unwilling to move in the same direction than normal, which meant she probably didn't even look like a worm with problems, but more like a spider who was about to go terminal. She didn't like the T-shirt waiting for her, even though she had been the one to lay it out. It depicted a cheeseburger with little legs. The tinies liked it. But today she found it juvenile and unprofessional. Not the kind of thing for a teacher's aide at all. Camilla shone the little light at the end of the clipboard on her so that she could do up the button on her trousers and then the cinch. And Nona spent some time mopping her wet fringe.
"Sorry I gave you a fright," said Camilla, "with the sponge. I didn't mean to."
All Nona's resentment melted away.
"No, I'm sorry I didn't get up," she said, contrite. "If you drop a sponge on me tomorrow, I promise I won't scream about it."
"I won't do the sponge again. Failed experiment."
The pencil worked away at the paper. Nona patted her hair down to make sure that the braids were still tight, that nothing was coming out, and when she stood up and peered at herself in the mirror, comforted herself on that part. Her hair still looked great, at least. There were dark circles under her eyes, and she rubbed them with her thumbs. "Nona, when you're looking at your hands..." That startled her. Camilla rarely asked anything after Nona had recited her dream.
"Yes?"
Who do they feel like they belong to? Do you like them?
Nona chortled. Not one bit.
Nona hated having hands. But Camilla didn't ask for any reason why. She just squinted a little as though she was trying to figure out what she could make for dinner out of a limited number of ingredients and said,
Sure. Thank you.
Was that a clue? Are we any closer? Do you know who I am yet?
No.
That's okay. I love you. Tell Palamedes I love him too. Don't forget, said Nona.
And very pleased with herself, went off to brush her teeth and eat her breakfast without even being told. That session had been nice and short. She was so early that Pyrrha hadn't even started cooking breakfast yet. Or maybe Pyrrha wasn't going to cook at all, because she hadn't got out the little beaker to fill up the heat ring, and she was getting out a big covered dish from the refrigerator. Pyrrha emerged from the fridge and said,
Cold mush all right? I covered it with fruit juice last night, threw a handful of dried sultanas in there too, so go hunting.
Better than eggs, decided Nona. How was work?
Excellent. Two of my guys got in a fight because someone said the fighting at Prithibi had been tougher than fighting at Antioch. Had to peel them off each other. Ear-biting stuff. Here, take some water. It's going to be a scorcher today.
Nona took the water from Pyrrha's brown, work-chapped hand and even sipped it. It was blisteringly cold.
Silly thing to fight about.
Absolutely. But there'll be more of that before the end, said Pyrrha. They would have just yelled at each other 3 months ago. Now they'd happily kill each other over who spilt whose beer. There's more dead bodies in the streets now than there were at the first barracks massacre. You see them lying around, dead, not of exposure either. Just dead. Creeps me out. How is it at school?
None of my friends want to kill each other, said Nona. Then she amended. I mean, they say it all the time, but they don't really. None of the little kids have bit each other in weeks. And when they argue too much, Hot Sauce says, Quiet! And they're quiet.
Hot Sauce is a girl with a future, so long as she gets a new name.
Honesty says there's a really special and wonderful reason behind her name, and I should ask her sometime, said Nona, trying to select the smallest possible bowl to have mush spooned into. Tiniest one for her, middlest one for Pyrrha, biggest one for Camilla and Palamedes. Then she remembered last night. Pyrrha, why does we suffer hate you?
Because I remind her that her god was just a human being who could get tired and fuck up, said Pyrrha instantly. That was the wonderful thing about Pyrrha. She didn't waste time saying things like, What made you think of that? Or why?
She went ahead and answered.
In a way, though, it was also a bad thing about Pyrrha, because she lied and told the truth at exactly equal top speeds.
I like to think she doesn't hate me so much anymore, now that she's seen my famous charm, that is. Now she probably says to herself, Of course, how could anyone have resisted it? Because I'm charming, Nona. That's what I am.
If you're that charming, said Nona, how come you're single?
Pyrrha struck an attitude, with a spoon over her forehead, that looked much too melodramatic for her wolfish, ribby body.
I've got a broken heart, and I'll never love again.
But even though Pyrrha was being ridiculous, Nona thought that she was saying it more truthfully than she wanted to. That if Nona looked at the way the red-brown eyes crinkled at the ends, Pyrrha really was broken-hearted somehow. Which made complete sense, if she thought about it. Pyrrha had used to be like Camilla and Palamedes, and now her equivalent of Palamedes was gone, really dead, killed by a terrible monster that nobody would describe to her. It seemed impossible to think of Camilla and Palamedes being apart.
Of course they were apart,
separated forever by a matter of minutes. But Nona knew they talked to each other in pages of letters and letters and letters. Nona had seen the stacks. Camilla didn't lock them up because Nona couldn't read, and when she said to Pyrrha, Are you going to read my correspondence? Pyrrha said,
Not unless I need to induce vomiting.
Nona was pushing mush around with her spoon when Camilla came in, rolling down the rolled-up cuffs of her shirt, and said, "Oh, God, we're on baby food," which of course meant it wasn't Camilla at all.
"Delicious num-nums for baby," said Pyrrha. "Anyway, it's this or beans and dried fish flakes. I thought you were bringing home groceries last night."
"I'm on half pay until they find someone to foot the drill bill," said Pyrrha.
"Yes, but what happened to that half?"
Pyrrha spooned the softened mush into the big-sized bowl and handed it to Palamedes.
"You are going to make someone a really irritating wife one day, Sextus," she said pleasantly.
"Dvay, if I thought you were drinking all of our money away, I would sleep a peaceful and easy sleep."
Palamedes brandished the spoon in her direction.
"Who and why for did you bribe?"
"Some guys.
Side C," said Pyrrha succinctly.
"For God's sake, Pyrrha.
If it's that hard to access, I'll swap you Site B. Cam and I have ways and means of accessing."
"I would pay any amount of money to stop you taking that risk you take," said Pyrrha, digging a spoon into her mush and placing it squarely in her mouth. It's so swallowable."
"Pyrrha," said Palamedes, "we only do it when we have to. And we'd do anything for a clue."
Pyrrha dropped her voice very low.
"Who gives a shit about clues? It's a thalergetic fuckfest you're subjecting that cerebral cortex to, is what it is. Every time you overlap, son, you're subjecting her thalamus to appalling stress. I greenlight it every time. I thoroughly scan her for... You should be draining and replacing her fucking brain fluid," said Pyrrha. "When Gideon and I designed that trial, I used to crack his skull and sieve it myself, just as a control variable. It's aggregative. I doubt you're testing her white blood cell count either. The only other people I put through that damn trial were Mercy and Chris, because only Chris didn't mind being trepanned on the regular. Fucking around with souls is the problem, Sextus. You can't ever get the full data on souls."
Palamedes ate a spoonful of mush very deliberately and thoughtfully.
"So you think I trust myself too much?" he said.
Pyrrha said,
"I think that you can't be your own checks and balances, and you shouldn't try."
"Sometimes you remind me of my mother," he said.
"A woman I'd kill to meet," said Pyrrha.
"Let's hope you get the chance," said Palamedes. "Then again..."
Nona teased a soft, swollen sultana to the top and mulched it between her teeth, trying to eat it very delicately. The mush wasn't bad, only too sweet and a little gritty, but she always had to decide which bits of it she could eat without either bringing it back up or anyone else working out what she was doing. She said,
"Are you two fighting now because everyone else in the city is fighting?"
Both Pyrrha and Palamedes looked a little hunted and guilty.
"Don't get too cute to live, kiddie," said Pyrrha.
But after all she had said, kiddie, and given one of her plaits a twitch.
"We're stressed, that's all. Eat your mush. God, this stuff's awful."
Funnily enough, Nona didn't mind it too much. It was so different from normal food that it was easy to swallow as much as she possibly could without thinking about it, which got her cheap praise from Pyrrha and Palamedes both. Palamedes ate his with a mechanical fury.
"Can't starve Cam," he said,
and then once he had just about finished with the bowl, his timer beeped and he said,
"Thank God, I did it."
And then there was Camilla. Camilla looked at Nona and said,
"Update?"
"Palamedes hates mush," said Nona.
"We had mush."
Camilla looked down at her plate, and then looked up at Pyrrha, who had reserved all of her sultanas for last and was spooning them into her mouth. She said,
"What happened to the food money?"
"I'm not fighting over this twice," said Pyrrha.
After that, there was still lots of time before school, so they did one of Nona's favourite things.
Nona got to stand on Pyrrha's feet, as Pyrrha and Camilla both lay down and did their morning crunches, their sit-ups and their stretches, with Pyrrha helping Camilla to stretch both her legs to the point where Nona was afraid she would go snap.
And then they ruthlessly stretched out Nona, too, making her touch her toes, making her stretch out on one leg, stretching her out, too, until she did hear a lot of little things go snap and felt brief, bright sizzles of pain.
"Got to keep your muscle up," said Pyrrha. "This is brute-forcing it."
At the end, she got her back and her calves rubbed, which was the best part. She felt breathless and sparkling by the time they started downstairs, more tired than she dared admit. But by the time they hit the street and wandered past the big steaming vents with the rest of the crowds, Nona felt better. They went down the street all the way and didn't take any turns until Pyrrha said at the park gates,
"Too busy. Let's go around."
And so Nona took Pyrrha's hand and they went around. They turned left at the dogleg around the park, past all of the braver stall owners and merchants setting up their wares, smoking cigarettes, setting down long, untidy cables attached to exhaust fans to blow smoke away from their shoppers. Nona hung back a little on Pyrrha's arm to see all of the rows of thin synthetic shirts and plastic-coated boots until Pyrrha said,
"What do you want from the cheapjacks, Nono?"
"Oh, nothing. Except it is my 6 month or soon," she reminded Pyrrha.
Camilla said, "You can get a present once it's been a year." Nona was alarmed. If she didn't get a present now, there was a good chance she would not get to have one later. But Pyrrha said,
"God, you think she's ever gotten presents? I visited her hometown back before Anastasia got settled, and it was grim as fuck then. Just spooky caves all the way down."
This interested Nona, except Cam said sharply, "Don't lead." And Pyrrha said,
"No leading, ma'am, I understand. What do you want for a gift, Nona?"
Nona seethed in a welter of greed.
"I want a pack of coloured rubber bands to tie my hair up with, so that you can put one colour on one braid and another colour on another, like beautiful Ruby has."
Pyrrha said,
"I said a present, Nona, something that costs something."
Nona was puzzled.
"That's why I picked it. It's cheap, so you can probably get it, even if you have to pay the demo crew half your money.
You don't earn much in the first place."
"Domestic life," said Pyrrha to Camilla over Nona's head, "is immensely depressing and has a lowering effect on the ego."
"Sometimes," said Camilla unexpectedly.
Once they went down two streets and back to where the park cut-through usually led them, Pyrrha kissed the top of Nona's head and said,
"Be good,"
and to Camilla said,
"I'll be home for dinner, honey, so don't go out with your girls and get your nails did."
"Try to bring home something useful this time," said Camilla. Nona felt a pang to see her go, sauntering off with her lunchbox and her helmet and her spare jacket, whistling a tune like she was any other worker. Then Nona was turning right with Camilla, hustling through an alley, past the building that now had the hole in it because of the very big gun. There was only one change in that Camilla picked a different road to go down, because she spotted a pair of legs sticking out underneath a parked car and decided to go a different way. And then Camilla and Nona got buzzed into the school building by the nice lady teacher and stood in the vestibule, shaking their boots. Nona was just in time. The move around the park meant she wasn't early at all. Cam stopped before Nona went to mount the stairs.
"I'll come to pick you up at the usual time," said Cam.
Nona said,
"Aren't you coming up?"
"Not this morning."
Then Camilla was gone. Which was a little puzzling. But as Nona stood in the cloakroom and unbuttoned her sand jacket and unrolled the sleeves, her attention was caught by the voices of her friends already in the classroom, and that of the nice lady teacher. When she peeked in, the nice lady teacher was leaning over Honesty and applying a cloth to one side of his face, with Kevin and Born in the Morning gathered around. A cluster of tinies who had come early were watching the proceedings in fascination.
"Hi, Nona!"
Honesty bawled in some agitation when he saw her.
Miss, let Nona do it. Miss, this is hurting my dignity.
The nice lady teacher was plainly stressed. She looked at Nona with relief and said,
Nona, could you come and hold this? I don't trust Honesty to keep it still.
It's too fucking cold is why, said Honesty.
Language, thank you, said the teacher coolly.
Sorry, miss, said Honesty. Only it is so it's cold as hell is what it is.
The teacher removed the cloth as Nona approached, fascinated. Kevin said,
Honesty's face smashed in.
And Bourne in the morning hastily said, It's nothing, it's just a black eye. But what a black eye. Honesty's whole eyeball was alarmingly blood red, and the bit around the eye was already turning startling colours, red and purple and blue. Nona was glad enough to take the cold, tingly-smelling cloth and put it back over the whole mess. Honesty whined,
For God's sake!
But the teacher said, Hold it there until the bell goes. Born in the morning, wipe the whiteboard, please. The rest of you, give Honesty some space immediately. Books out, things ready, then down on the mat, waiting for the bell. Awestruck, Nona kept peeking at the eye, then remembering she was a teacher's aide and reapplying the cloth hastily. Honesty asked,
What is that stuff?
I don't know. Medicine, probably, said Nona.
Honesty?
What happened?
You should see the other guy, said Honesty, very loudly. Then he said in lowered tones, Shut up, Nona. Haven't you seen a black eye before?
Not really, said Nona, honestly.
Whenever Pyrrha got hit hard in the face, it was better in seconds, and neither Camilla nor Palamedes ever got hit hard in the face. And of course, she'd never gotten any kind of black eye she could see.
She said, It looks awful. Your eyes all bloody and your cheeks huge.
Honesty puffed up at this.
I guess it's hideous.
There was no sign of hot sauce, not until the angel came in with her tie-on squiff and her shirt buttons all done up into the wrong holes, still wearing the same trousers that she had been wearing yesterday. She wasn't late today, but she looked more tired and lined than she had the day before. Somehow she even looked shorter, more hunched and defeated, but she rallied magnificently when she saw Honesty. She paused in front of him and Nona and said,
Go on, let me have a look at it.
Nona peeled away the cloth to reveal the damage.
Nasty, said the angel appreciatively. Think I'll get a scar, said Honesty.
No, it just looks disgusting, said the angel, looking him over.
She reached over to probe gently at one of the swollen bits as Honesty flinched.
It's going to hurt like fury, though.
The main teacher came over with a relieved expression, having seen off a parent.
Oh, thank goodness you're here. I wouldn't have the first clue what to do. Does he need to go to the clinic?
No, nothing's detached or broken as far as I can tell, said the angel, draping the cold cloth back on his face.
Once he's had 10 minutes with that, we'll give him an ice pack wrapped in a towel. What in living memory hit you, Honesty? This wasn't a fist.
But Honesty glared at her truculently out of his other eye.
How do you know? You weren't there. It might have been a fist. Might have been two.
Honesty, she's a doctor, said the nice lady teacher.
Well, said the angel, straightening her lapels in a funny way, I am adjacent to being a doctor, and I'm getting a good crash course in, triage. Anyway, Honesty, if you don't want to talk about it, that's your lookout. I don't like violent stories myself.
I'm not squealing to anyone. I'm not Kevin, said Honesty.
Sure, nobody here minds. Be good for Nona. She's doing you a favour.
The nice lady teacher looked as though she did mind, but she followed along in the angel's wake, chatting inconsequentially about traffic, which left Nona to hold the damp cloth to Honesty's eye and shield him from goggle-eyed tinies until the bell was rung to start the school day. The angel got him an ice pack wrapped in a staffroom dish towel, and he seemed quite glad to hold it to his face, really.
Hot Sauce had trailed in behind the angel at a suitable and careless distance. She passed by her own seat and ousted a Tiny who sat near the window, and when questioned about it, the Tiny peeped up that they had wanted to swap with Hot Sauce anyway, so all the main teacher could say was that they would swap back, please, after the break. Nona rather doubted whether this would happen, and in any case, it was a silly idea to pit your will against Hot Sauce's. Hot Sauce was always going to win, and the whole class knew it. This was illustrated at break. All of the gang were inclined to fawn over Honesty with his wound. Nona's fruit had been promised to Bourne in the morning, but Bourne in the morning didn't even raise an issue when half that portion got slid along to Honesty, and most of the class had clustered around too, out of their seats when they weren't meant to be, asking him if his eye was going to fall out. Hot Sauce told them, "Scatter!" And they scattered. Then she said, "Who did this to you?"
"You don't have to go ape shit, Hot Sauce," Honesty said sulkily. "I don't want to talk about it. I can't talk about it. I promised."
Hot Sauce sat down on the cushion in front of him. She waited, resting her elbows on her knees and her hands in her lap, and she stared with her eyes open, not blinking, not watering. She did the thing she only did every so often, and only when they all begged her to. Made her eyes go very wide and the corners very white, because the stiff, greyish, rosish ripples of her burns didn't move when the other bits of her did. This made her suddenly lopsided and terrible with waiting. Bourne in the morning and beautiful Ruby and Nona all stopped eating and got very quiet. The only one who kept eating in perfect serenity was Kevin. Honesty swallowed and said,
"Come off it, boss."
Hot Sauce said, "You keeping secrets from me, Honesty?" Honesty shrivelled.
"Eh."
"Okay," said Hot Sauce. Even shrivelled, Honesty still wavered, which Nona found impressive.
"Boss, maybe not in front of, you know, the kids."
"We don't have secrets from each other," said Hot Sauce. Honesty swallowed again. He bent his head toward the rest of them and stared at the floor. At this cue, they all put their heads together, even Nona, despite the fact that Camilla had said not to do that if at all possible because of nits. Honesty dropped his voice so low that they almost couldn't hear it. Then he said what had hit him. Nona, who was good at hearing whispers, didn't have to strain to make it out. But Hot Sauce said,
"Say that again."
Probably because she didn't believe it. This made Honesty go red and he hissed,
"A street light! I'm not fucking kidding you here!"
Bourne in the morning's voice was shrill with astonishment.
"My man, how'd you let a street light hit you?" "Keep it quiet," Honesty said,
and Kevin said,
"It fell on you."
"No, I ran into it with my face. So hard I fell on my ass and blacked out, and when I woke up, some wino who felt sorry for me had dragged me into their alley. So that's how low I fell. I got babied by a tramp," said Honesty.
Then he said more reflectively,
"Probably saved my life, though. They were good tramps. Didn't understand what the fuck they were saying. They kept checking my eyes and my mouth and miming going, ah, and fucking biting at the air. Wonder if they were on something new. I gotta know for market economics."
Honesty was talking very fast. When he had taken a couple of breaths and put a piece of fruit in his mouth for comfort, it was tiny sprays of green berries, the slightly soggy kind you had to suck off the stems. He said,
"Anyway, I was out of my fucking mind scared."
Hot Sauce said,
"The job?"
"Yeah."
Honesty fidgeted with the empty spray and picked between one of his teeth with it, which seemed to give him courage.
"It was a fucked up job. I'm not doing odd jobs with those guys anymore. Well, can't anymore, even if I wanted to, come to think of it."
Now Hot Sauce was very quiet and gentle when she said, "Tell what happened." Honesty took another spray to fortify himself. It was one of Beautiful Ruby's sprays,
but beautiful Ruby didn't even complain.
I thought the job was to go down into the tunnels and get the stuff off the pipes, but it was Vanguy's, said Honesty, very fast. I said, no, sir, not if we're knocking off a gun vehicle, but they said no. They were going to grapple for aircon units off the tops of mega trucks. You know, circuit boards and coolant and shit. They said the trucks don't even notice until the next pit stop if you do it right. The driver just thinks the gasket's blown or something. I don't know. One of the old chicks explained it, but I didn't get it. And I wasn't going to be grappling. I was going to be put in one of the overheads holding out the net so the grapplers could get back up. I don't get sick around heights.
He suckled one of the sprays completely free of berries and chewed them. This close up, there was a little bit of saliva, so everyone went, ugh, and leant back. But then they leant back in.
Honesty said, even more quickly now. It was a neat job, right? They drop on the van from the top of the tunnel. They unscrew the unit, then down the end of the street, we're there with the net and we scoop up the guy and the unit. The timing's sweet as hell.
He looked at Hot Sauce, implacable and opposite, and he swallowed again and said,
worked fine first two times. Then they were like, let's do a third, let's do a third. And their guy in charge was like, well, we don't have a timetable, but okay, we'll get into position, and if something comes along, we'll do one last run. So the guy gets in position, and so do we.
He stopped.
Keep going, said Bourne in the morning, urgently.
The rest of them shushed him, Hot Sauce included, and even Kevin.
Honesty didn't join in. His eyes only met Hot Sauce's eyes now.
Then we heard the noise, whispered Honesty. I thought it was an earthquake. I just about pissed myself. Just about. I saw them go beneath me. The heat nearly fucking roasted me and the other guy, but we'd skinned up, and I always slop extra thermal, like you tell me. I'm the good boy. I burn like fish in a rowboat, don't I? We had on masks, so we didn't choke, even me. They're professionals, but the guy had fucking dropped for them. I don't know what the fuck he was thinking. Why did he drop? Why did he drop for that? Fucking nuts, man. Fucking nutter. Just brain dead. Just out of his ears.
This was all pretty incoherent, and Nona didn't quite follow it, and Honesty's voice had risen in a kind of strangled way, broken a little too, and nobody had even made fun of that either. Then Hot Sauce reached out and put her hand quietly and firmly on Honesty's shoulder, and that calmed him down. But he was sweating. He was warm. He smelled like an overheated animal.
So we pick him up when he beeps us. We get the net out, Honesty said, more slowly, more methodically. We get him up, and he hasn't even got shit. He's like, go! Lead guy's like, get out! Get back to the car! So we climb up the pipes, and we get out to the vehicle, and we stash everything else, and I get in. I'm in the car with the guy, and his boss is there over the radio, and this guy's fucking crying. He's a grown man. He's all like, I fucked up, I fucked up. And the boss is like, who did we hit? And he's like, I don't know. And then he tells us this fucked up story. Says he dropped onto the back, and it was real sophisticated. He climbed down into the vent pipes to get the unit. Pay dirt, he said. Real good stuff. But then he pulled up a vent, and he saw down into the cargo trawler, and he said he saw.
Honesty broke off. A shiver ran down Nona's spine. Nobody asked him to continue.
People with no eyes, said Honesty.
Bourne in the morning said unsteadily,
he was bullshitting you.
Honesty ignored him. He said,
said the eyes was all white, but he said he was moving quietly, real quietly, and these guys, they're all just sitting around. They all look up, they all look at him with these white-out eyes. They all look up at the same time. They look at him. He kept saying that, he said suddenly, breaking off.
He said,
kept saying, they saw me! They saw me! Oh, my God!
His voice took on a more normal cast, and he said,
then he said that someone in the van behind started taking pot shots at him, so he called for pickup. The boss was all, calm down, calm down. But then the driver said we were being followed. And the guy goes crazy, sobbing and apologising, saying he fucked up. He got us in trouble. And then one of the old chicks is like, get the kid out. And they stop the car, and there's another two big trucks pulling up behind us. Militia trucks with guys and...
For a moment, Honesty couldn't talk. They all sat there together and breathed as one. Nona matching her breath to Hot Sauce, matching her breath to Honesty and Beautiful Ruby and Born in the Morning and even Kevin, all in one tight and sweating circle. Then in a completely normal and even brassy voice, Honesty said,
Then I ran like fuck and I bumped my head on a pole so bad I probably got brain damage, so you have to all be very nice to me.
The whole group absorbed this. Nona reached down for one of the empty sprays and chewed at the ends, wanting something to chew on, if not to eat, liking the way the tough, fibrous stem felt between her teeth. Then Born in the Morning said,
You just said like 42 swears.
Oh my God, man, shut up, said Honesty. It's not fair if I swear and get in trouble with Nona and Honesty doesn't, said Born in the Morning.
Shut up, Born in the Morning, said Kevin.
And because Kevin never told anyone to shut up, Born in the Morning shut up. But that was okay. That broke the atmosphere. Hot Sauce kept her hand on Honesty's shoulder and said, You think they're following you? And Honesty said,
Nah. Nah.
And then, I'm your boy, right, Hot Sauce? I'm your best boy?
Yes, said Hot Sauce gently.
You're my boy. I'll take care of you. Then there was the main teacher standing over them, and they looked up guiltily from their huddle. But she was only smiling at them in the way teachers did when they thought they knew what was going on and didn't really.
Group meeting, is it? She said kindly. Honesty, here's one of the shelter pamphlets, okay?
Honesty was so affrighted that he just said,
Yes, miss. Thank you, miss.
And took it.
Don't worry about a thing, she said. Clean up, everyone. It's nearly class time. Nona, could you ring the bell? Then you'd better leash up Noodle. I want to mark some books.
Nona jumped up immediately.
Yes, of course.
But she didn't go right away. She went back down into a crouch as the rest of them picked up fragments of stem and crushed berry from the floor. Not so many crushed berries. They weren't stupid. And she volunteered.
I'll take care of you too, Honesty.
Who wants you to take care of me? Said Honesty cheerfully, getting to his feet. You're dumb as a box of hair, Nona.
Nona was indignant, but Hot Sauce said,
How many vehicles?
I don't know, said Honesty. I wasn't counting the whole way, and the guy picked the middle one, middle-ish. Over 10. Could have been 20. Mega trucks, all of them. I'll tell you what, he said, and he brushed his trousers off and he said heavily, I know what it was. I hang out with you lot. I know the deal. Nobody ever asks poor old Honesty. Honesty could have told him not to try and knock off the goddamn convoy.
8. Hot Sauce approached Nona before the hour of science and said,
You're still on lookout.
What with all the fuss about Honesty, it had completely escaped Nona's mind that someone was watching, or that Hot Sauce was investigating. But that was Hot Sauce for you. Hot Sauce never forgot. Nona said, keeping a weather eye on the angel,